We've taken a good bit of time on Lesson 4, and I appreciate your discussion, your interest in this study. I'm going to go a little quicker on this last section tonight, although we can discuss anything you wish and talk about it. Let me give you a little bit of review. What we've been talking about is really how should a local church function? What instructions has God given for a local church? And we have spent a good bit of time in the critical foundational study we've been emphasizing over and over again is that the Lord has given instructions, complete instructions, sufficient instructions. And that we believe that the instructions of the Lord are so sufficient that we want to have authority for the things that we do. And when you take that approach toward a local church, you will find you take the local church, you take all the verses that talk about what a local church is to do, you stay within that authority, then you will know what a local church ought to be and ought to do in its function. We've also talked about there's a difference between the responsibility and the work of an individual Christian and the responsibility and the work of a local church. That is very obvious as you look through several verses. And that really we want to know what a local church is to do. We need to look at passages that address a local church in the context. And so with that in mind, we've studied the area of evangelism and edification. We looked at verses talking about churches being involved in the teaching of the word to Christians, the teaching of the word to non-Christians. We talked about what are aids, what helps in the teaching of the gospel, what are additions when we do something else. And so as we've taken that approach, we've said all along, okay, we want to stay within Scripture. We want to stay within that which is authorized. And we saw very clearly what the work of a church is. And we talked about a lot of questionable areas that brethren have been involved with in different places and circumstances. And we talked about how in many places, I'm afraid, a couple of things have happened. One is that brethren have stopped giving authority for the work of the church. And that's one of the big things I have seen personally. In the places I've been, in my limited experience as a Christian, brethren would say, we need to have book, chapter, and verse for our worship. And instrumental music would be an addition because all you find is, for an example, is singing. And you look at all the verses on singing and you find no authority for the instrument. And people, brethren, have been good about that and saying, we don't have authority for the instrument, we don't do it. But then when it comes to the work of the church, brethren don't want to do that. They don't want to look at book, chapter, and verse. And rather than looking at book, chapter, and verse for your practice, people began to started criticizing you, saying, well, the Bible doesn't say not to maybe have the church involved in recreational facilities from the treasury, and they would use other arguments, call you names, rather than giving a book, chapter, and verse. And that's bad. That's not good. What has happened, I believe, over time now is that churches that refuse to have authority for the work of the church are now bringing that attitude into the worship. But again, those are just some observations I've made. Another thing that I've seen very much as we talk about this subject, a misconception, is that some people think that if the church doesn't do it through its treasury, then the work will not get done. And that is a huge misconception. Huge. If the only bit of evangelism we did was through the local treasury, we wouldn't be very evangelistic. Majority of evangelism is done by individuals. If the benevolence, and we're going to talk about benevolence tonight, it's been a controversial issue, if only benevolence that is done through the Lord is done through the church, then there wouldn't be much benevolence being done. The bulk of benevolence has been done by individuals. The bulk of the work of the Lord is done by individuals. And so some people say, well, Larry, if you're against the church supporting, let's say, recreational facilities out of the treasury because there's no authority, are you against Christians getting together and doing things recreationally? Well, of course not. Because it's not done out of the treasury doesn't mean we can't do it. With it, as individuals, we have that authority. We have that right, and we can do that. And that's some of the points that I think that I like to make as we do go through these studies. Just because the church may be more limited than the individual doesn't mean that there's a work that could not be done. And that's particularly true when we get into the area of benevolence. We want to talk about what a local church is to do in the area of benevolence. This has been a very controversial subject. I think it was made controversial, frankly, by certain forces that be, frankly. I think Christians getting together in a calm way, studying that we could come together and draw some conclusions about what a local church ought to do or ought not to do. But let's talk a little bit about this. You do see a tremendous number of scripture talking about local churches being involved in helping needy Christians. And I want to look at some of the verses. I want to talk about some things about this. And we might not be as organized on this night. We'll see how far we go with this. But in the very beginning, we read about how the local church was involved in taking care of those amongst their number that were in need. In Acts 2:44, it says, "Now all who believed were together and had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need." Now here's a statement made that here in Acts 2 that there were those that were in need. There were brethren that went to the point to sell possessions or lands, and they helped these Christians. Now somebody may say, well, how do you know that's church action here? Well, one of the things I do see in other verses, you see, for instance, in Acts chapter 4, then later Acts chapter 5, you will see that this was a collection, that the church did this sort of thing, where Ananias and Sapphira, for instance, they sold their possessions and they brought it and laid it at the apostles' feet. It was a collection. And so I think in this context, I think it would be fair to conclude that this was likely the treasury being involved with this. And we'll look at other verses. We're going to look at Acts 2 in just a moment. But notice as we look at these things, there's a couple of misconceptions that people have. First off, I used to preach this. I didn't read these verses very closely. I used to say that early Christians sold everything they had in order to help others that were in need. Some may have, but does this verse say they sold everything they had? No. There's some people that take a view of the early church as if they were communistic, that they sold all their possessions and then it was kind of redistributed to people. No. What happened is they sold the things they had. They then took that money and then they gave to people who were in need. The people receiving here were in need. We're going to try to look at these verses one by one. Any observations any of you would like to make before we go to the other verses, they're going to be very similar here. Look at another verse, Acts 4, as I mentioned. It says, "Now the multitude of those who believed were of one heart and one soul. Neither did anyone say that any of the things he possessed was his own, but they had all things in common. And with great power, the apostles gave witness to the resurrection of the Lord Jesus, and great grace was upon them all. Nor is there any among them who lacked. For all who were possessors of lands or houses sold them and brought the proceeds of the things that were sold and laid them at the apostles' feet. And they distributed to each as anyone had need." Notice again here. Let's just raise this question. I think this is an interesting one as we look at the early church. Why was this money taken up? What was the problem? What was the need in these verses, both Acts 2 and in Acts 4? There was need. There was genuine need. How would we define need? Did they maybe couldn't make payments on their swimming pool, or maybe their cable bill, you know, with all the extra channels, they kind of wanted to have that and they couldn't like the rest of the brethren, and therefore they got... No, need here was real need. Keep in mind, this was not the United States in this particular time in history. Sometimes we don't particularly understand that when we're looking at a historical account, there was no government aid program. Nothing. Some have suggested, well, here in Acts 2, and again, this is supposition, it's a possibility. In Acts 2, there were people that came from all over the world. If you remember early in Acts 2, the listing of the nationalities, there were 3,000 baptized, and then there were thousands more being baptized as you see the early church. It may well have been that several Christians didn't go home. They stayed to be taught by the apostles, and therefore they had only a certain amount of money and certain amount of provisions, and they stayed longer. That's some possibility. We don't know why so many were in need. But there was a great need here. I mean, there were those selling houses. They were selling lands. Now, was it their own house they lived in? It doesn't say that. It could have been an extra house. It could have been the house they lived in. I don't know. It didn't say they sold everything they had. But it certainly shows you that there was such a great need that brethren were willing to do what it took to help. We may one day go back to that. Our government could collapse. Our monetary system could become worthless. It may be a kind of time where you may have to have a wheelbarrow of $100 bills to go buy a loaf of bread. And when that day comes, we might have to have an approach where we're going to have to take care of those that are needy, and particularly those amongst the believers. Let's keep reading. Acts 6. Now in those days, when the number of disciples was multiplying, there arose a complaint against the Hebrews by the Hellenists, because their widows were neglected in the daily distribution. Then the 12 summoned the multitude of the disciples and said, "It is not desirable that we should leave the word of God and serve tables. Therefore, brethren, seek out from among you 7 men of good reputation, full of the Holy Spirit and wisdom, whom we may appoint over this business, but we will give ourselves continually to prayer and to the ministry of the word." Now notice in this context, there was a need. There was a daily distribution being described here. This daily distribution was described as serving tables. And so I believe implied in this, and understood from the context, is that there was a need in the congregation involving food, involving a distribution of food. And it was such a regular need that it was a daily distribution, and some were neglected. And they had to deal with that problem. But again, as we look here, we see very much so the local church involved in a benevolent need. And here the apostles in this case said, "Look, we want to have some men put over this business, and we want to give ourselves to prayer and to the ministry of the word." Now, let's keep going. Look at Acts 11. We'll go look at another situation here later, several years later. You read about a prophet who knew of a coming famine in Jerusalem, in Judea, in the surrounding areas surrounding Judea. It says, "And in these days, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch. Then one of them named Agabus stood up and showed by the Spirit that there was going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Claudius Caesar. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. So this they also did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul." The next lesson, lesson 5, we're going to talk about the organization of the church. We're going to talk about some things relating to this particular circumstance and situation. But what happened here is that a prophet by the name of Agabus knew ahead of time that there was going to be a great famine. And here he's going to Antioch, because the famine was evidently going to particularly hit Judea. And so ahead of time, through the direction of the Holy Spirit, the church at Antioch took up a collection. And that money was sent to Judea, and it was sent to the elders. So we have a situation here of where one church was going to have a famine hit it so hard that they could not take care of their needs. And they were going to need the assistance of other congregations. And what happened in this case was the brethren in Antioch took up a collection and they sent it to the elders in Judea. I'm going to develop this in the area of organization in the next lesson. But again, we see benevolent need. Benevolent need not only where a local church would take care of its needy, but circumstances where a local church would send money to another church or other churches, because they had a benevolent need they could not meet. The other verses I have here are dealing with an additional situation very similar to Acts 11. It's not the same famine. It's another one. Another one that Paul speaks of in 1 Corinthians 16 and 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 in Romans chapter 15. When we read the passage in 1 Corinthians 16, 2, talking about a collection on the first day of the week, that is in the context of a collection that was being taken up that was going to be sent from other churches to churches in need, in this particular, to the church in Jerusalem. Notice how Acts 15:26 puts it. "For it pleased those from Macedonia and Achaia to make a certain contribution for the poor among the saints who were in Jerusalem." Now let me just stop here just for a moment. I haven't really talked a lot about this, and we're going to look at some verses and debate this a little bit, but one of the common things you're going to see as we look at these verses is that a local church has an obligation to its members. One of the controversies that could come up that brethren may discuss and talk about is, well, do we have an obligation outside of Christians? Do we have a responsibility to non-Christians from the treasury? And that has been a very controversial issue. I would ask of you, as we go through these verses, to look at the context of these verses, to look at statements like this that are made, and ask the question, what do you find when you go through all the verses? Now, as I go through all these verses, very similar to what I would do as I study instrumental music, I took all the verses that talks about churches being involved in benevolence, and I see things just like this, where it's talking about the idea, it's fellowship, that it's the idea that it's for the poor among the saints who are in Jerusalem. I see that common theme. And by looking at that, and the conclusion I draw, and we'll look at some other verses that are debatable on this, but I have concluded that really from the treasury that's where the money ought to go. Does that mean we don't help other people that aren't Christians in benevolence? No. We find people that are in need, we need to help them. But we may do that through as individuals and not necessarily through a local church. Debatable point. Each church has got to debate that, look at that, study that. Notice again the common theme in this particular collection as it's discussed, and we've looked at Romans 15. Look at 1 Corinthians 16. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I've given order to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. Now notice here, Paul has given an order, a command. Command to the churches of Galatia. Command to Corinth. Notice what he's going to do. And when I come, whoever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. But if it is fitting that I go also, they will go with me. What you find here is that a collection was being taken up for the needy Christians in Jerusalem. Here, there was going to be collected, and then it was going to be sent. And the church had a responsibility to make sure that money was going to be sent in a way they were comfortable with. And we will see later in 2 Corinthians 8 where they actually had the choice to send messengers with the money. You know, they didn't have a postal service or a way to wire things back then. You know, if you want to get your money to some place, you need to get somebody with that money and take it to that place, and that could be very challenging. And so Paul didn't want to just assume that, okay, I'll take the money. No, he gave them a choice as to how they were going to get the money there. But in this context, and we'll look at more verses, in this context we're talking about taking care of needy Christians. Now here's a verse that sometimes can be interpreted as being broader than that. It's a very interesting discussion. I've had private studies with folks on this, and I think it's a very interesting passage that as we look at this question, 2 Corinthians 9. By the way, we did not look at all of 2 Corinthians 8 and 9. The entire two chapters are dealing with this particular contribution. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 12. For the administration of this service not only supplies the needs of the saints, but also is abounding through many thanksgivings to God. While through the proof of this ministry they glorify God for the obedience of your confession to the gospel of Christ, and for your liberal sharing with them and in all men, and by their prayer for you, who long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Here the contribution spoken of in 1 Corinthians 16, Romans 15, 2 Corinthians 8, 2 Corinthians 9, the same contribution. Here he's describing this, is that this contribution is going to supply the needs of the saints, that it's going to create a glorification of God. But it's not that this was going to be a one-time affair. We've already seen earlier in Acts 11, there was another circumstance where a church sent money to another church in need. And there was the potential for additional situations where that would take place. And so as you look at verse 13, it says, as for your liberal sharing with them, and I would conclude that's dealing with Jerusalem, and all, men is in italics, but I don't mind if you want to, you know, put that in there. I believe it's dealing with the specific situation at Jerusalem and all, dealing with all future potential circumstances like this. And what happens as you study this situation, whether it's going to be the present circumstance or the future, that God is going to be glorified. Verse 14, those that receive this benevolent need will pray for you. Those who receive this benevolent need will long for you because of the exceeding grace of God in you. Implied throughout this is a sense of fellowship. I know that some brethren would conclude differently about the latter part of verse 13. I understand that. But as I study these verses, try to be very careful. I know conclusively that the Lord would approve of a local church not only taking care of the needy amongst themselves, but finding a situation where a church could not take care of their needy and sending money to them so that that distribution might be made. Okay, you've listened to me preach a little bit. We've covered a lot of verses. We may be going too fast. Questions or comments? Let me get to this, and this is practical. Today, 2010, we are involved with trying to help people in benevolent needs. What criteria should a local church make before they help someone in the area of benevolence? This is very practical. It's kind of interesting. Sometimes we tend to almost want to give it off to somebody else who makes all the decisions, and we'll be talking about this in the next lesson. The local church has got to make decisions. It's got to make decisions about the work, got to see that the work is executed. Who should be helped in the realm of benevolent need from the church treasury? Yes. It's a great answer. Now the question is, how do we know that? I mean, it's good. I mean, should how would you know? Yes. What would you repeat for me? Right. So basically, repeat, person who is doing their best, but is falling short. They're not trying to take it easy. They're doing their best. And then the point, and this gets sticky. This gets difficult. How do you know? And that's why in a situation like this, we do need to know. We do not want to become overseers of somebody else, but we do have the right. A local church has to ask. It's great when you have elders. They can be a little more, you know, they can be a little more discreet and work and talk and ask, but there needs to be an understanding in that situation that here is a genuine need, and I want to tell you, brethren will go out of their way to help. We will do what we can. Sometimes you have situations and circumstances where it's not always as clear cut, and sometimes, because particularly if you don't have elders, you know, in a men's business meeting, if there's some degree of doubt, a lot of times we might take a situation that potentially could be helped from the treasury and do it through individuals just to make sure that there's not any problems in terms of our internal unity. I'll have to say, without elders, the benevolent situation can get really sticky. It can become difficult, and that's one reason why congregation, particularly congregation of this size, we need to be working hard to develop elders so with their wisdom and their ability, they can help and work in these circumstances. Let me show you another verse. I don't know why I don't have it in my outline here. I want to show you another interesting passage. 1 Timothy chapter 5. Here, the Bible is talking about a situation. Let me make sure it's not in the outline. It may be. Sometimes I forget where I've put everything. No, it's not in there because I think I limited this because of the length of the outline. But look at 1 Timothy 5. Here is a passage that I believe is talking about the local church, I believe, helping one that is a widow indeed. And in verse 5 it says, in 1 Timothy 5:3 it says, honor widows who are really widows. But if any widow has children or grandchildren, let them first learn to show piety at home and repay their parents, for this is good and acceptable before God. Now she who is really a widow and left alone trusts in God and continues in supplications and prayers night and day. But she who lives in pleasure is dead while she lives. And these things command that they may be blameless. But if anyone does not provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. Do not let a widow under 60 years old be taken into the number, and not unless she has been the wife of one man, well reported for good works, if she has brought up children, if she has lodged strangers, if she has washed the saints' feet, if she has relieved the afflicted, if she has diligently followed every good work. But refuse younger widows, for when they begin to grow wanton against Christ, they desire to marry, having condemnation because they've cast off their first faith. And besides this, they learn to be idle, wandering about from house to house, and not only idle, but gossips and busybodies, saying things which they ought not. Therefore, I desire that the younger widows marry, bear children, manage the house, give no opportunity to the adversary to speak reproachfully. For some have already turned aside after Satan. Now look at verse 16. If any believing man or woman has widows, let them relieve them, and do not let the church be burdened, that it might relieve those who are really widows. As you look at this verse here, so I've had sometimes on question nights this will be asked, you know, what does this mean? You've got a qualification set up for the church, certain people that would be helped, and if they don't meet these qualifications, they're not to be helped. What does that mean? My best explanation is the idea of being taken into the number would be a permanent, ongoing, benevolent relief. Best explanation I can give. Some of you may give a better, another explanation, but you see a tremendous discernment here. Notice some things that are not to happen. If the woman is able to work, she ought to work and provide. If she's able to marry, she ought to marry. I mean, that's not saying you married in order to have money. That's, I don't think that's what that's saying here. But it's talking here about a more permanent situation and alternatives to that. If she has children, if she has family, the family ought to take care of that person. There is an order here. Here is somebody, let's say a faithful Christian, but let's suppose they've got, children or grandchildren that have the ability to help her. Well, does it go to the church first and then the family help if the church doesn't help? No, that's backwards. It's those that are within the family would have the first responsibility. And you would not want to have things put upon the church in which family members can and should take care of. Questions or comments? Stephen. Yeah, if they were met in this context, if they met the qualifications, surely so. Might have to withdraw from the Christians that weren't doing what they ought to if they were members of that local congregation. There's a lot of challenges in a local congregation as we try to determine those that we help. And so I'm saying people ought to be very merciful about this. Christians that I know will do anything to help a legitimate need. And I've seen that. I've seen that in so many places. You know what the challenge is today? Challenge is today is to find a legitimate need. And a lot of times the people that come to you, particularly if they come off the street, and that's a whole other area I could talk to you about, that you don't always, sometimes there are those that are professional beggars. You never see them from Adam. They show up at the door. They come up with a story. They ask for money, and then you never see them again. Those situations, people need to be wise. I'm saying be wise here. We do not want to help someone that, let's say, is a drug addict or somebody that's involved in alcoholism or something else like that. We don't want to help somebody who could work, but they would rather take money from others. Those are the challenges. Because what happens, and I'll get to you in a minute, Ken, what happens if we help someone that could work and won't work? Are we helping them by giving them money so they can pay their bills? or are we hurting them? Those are things you've got to think about. I'll give you an illustration or two. This is dealing with just general benevolence. When I first started preaching, I was sincere. When somebody came to me and they talked about a need, we'd have people knock on the door. I would go after them. What do you need? What is your circumstance? What is your situation? And without doing any discernment at all, I would go collect money and get brethren to give money, and I would give money. And I will tell you, I think that I probably personally, and the Lord knows I was sincere, but I personally believe, because of the nature of how people came to me and how I never heard from them again, I probably threw away thousands of dollars as a Christian early. I'll never forget one brother, Lloyd Barker, told me about the people who come through wanting gas money. He says, you know, I used to just give them gas money, go put gas in the car, never give them the money because they're... And then he says, I would give them a self-addressed stamped envelope and say, when you get to where you're at, would you send me this postcard back? You know how many postcards he got back? Zero. I started doing the same thing. Guess how many postcards I got back? Zero. And suddenly I began realizing that, you know, I don't need to just go run after anyone who asks. Let me tell you what I started doing. And we're talking about people coming from off the street. We're not talking about brethren that we know. We're not talking about circumstances that we know. I'm just talking about in general. People think I'm hard-hearted, but I think I'm doing right in this. What I do now when somebody comes to me out of the blue, I listen to them. I ask them questions about their background. I ask them about people they know, where they came from, where they stayed. And then after I talk to them for about 5 or 10 minutes, I asked them this very hard question. Could you give me the phone number of one person on the face of this earth, of anybody that you've named, so I can call and confirm your story? I eliminated 95%. I'll never forget one time I talked to a man and asked him to give me the number. He couldn't do it. He got mad at me, and I kind of got frightened about it. A week later, a man came to the church building, gave me a similar story. I asked for a number, and he gave me a number. And I called the number. And as I was talking to the guy, I recognized the voice. It was the guy that had come by a week earlier, and he had sent somebody else out. But I'm just telling you, as we talk about this area of benevolence, there's legitimate needs. And when we find a legitimate need, we are so happy to help. We do not want to be stingy with the money. I know my brethren. We had circumstances up in Charlottesville where we found people we thought were legitimate, and we gave and gave deeply from our pockets money that we didn't necessarily have, that we found a way to make up for it. But we were confident we were helping people that we knew and knew something about. So I don't know if that, I've got off the outline a little bit on this, But I do believe that this is an important area, and possibly one, as we see the circumstances changing in our country, that we may see more situations and circumstances where we're going to be more involved with this. Comments or questions? Yes. Yes. Yeah. One of the things, we're going to talk about organization in the next lesson and talk about, we don't want to get a situation where we do a work by proxy, where we just give the money and all the decisions and all the responsibility and the stress of praying that you make the right decision and do it in the right way. We just give somebody else. We don't want to do that. And that's true in every aspect of our work. But it is very true that that it requires us. One of the easiest things in the world to do, and I've stopped myself, is just giving a handout. It's the easiest thing in the world, isn't it? You can give a handout, and the person goes on their way, and you not be involved at all. I try to, in areas when I'm involved, to try to get involved, not just by giving a handout, but getting to know them, getting involved. It requires my person. It's a big challenge. Sorry, Ken, I didn't come back with you a minute ago. And that is true. But I'll say again, too, it's a sensitive thing. It is a sensitive thing. And we should be very sensitive and careful. But at the same time, there ought to be understanding in both circumstances, as we're dealing with that. Yes. Yes. All right. Yes, Stephen. And let me say, when we're talking about an area like this, it's important that spiritual people be on the front. While we want to be involved, sometimes unspiritual people, a weak Christian, a Christian that doesn't have a lot of experience, they really ought not to be on the point, because they can make some poor judgments, they can pull back, they cannot have the tenderness and the wisdom. And so there's a lot here when we talk about this. I know Christians, we want to be giving. We want to help. We want to have a legitimate need to be a part and to help. And many times it might require something more than money. Money is just a small element. And when it requires more than money, it's going to require us. Okay, let me flip through a few things here on the chart, and then we're finishing this lesson tonight. We haven't had a bell ring yet, have we? Okay, good. All right. We've had one? Okay. All right. Okay, we talked already. Just because local church doesn't do a certain aspect of the work doesn't mean it can't be done. Individuals' responsibilities are broader. When you take all these verses together, you find that a church has a responsibility of benevolence to need Christians. That they could, under general authority, if the need was great enough and might be a long enough circumstances, they could buy rent a building, they could provide caregivers, they could buy services of a hospital or a nursing facility. We'll talk about that in the study of organization. Second bell hasn't rung yet, has it? It did ring? Okay, I'm sorry. I always need help on this, guys, particularly my head's turned. We'll start next week on organization, Lord willing, and appreciate your participation.